Chapter 9. The benefits to you and your family provided by a Living Trust package. There are two principal benefits to a Living Trust package. The first is to avoid probate. Probate, you will recall, is a court proceeding, a lawsuit, that becomes necessary when the owner of property dies and there is no other mechanism in place other than a court order to provide for the transfer of ownership of one or more assets. A trust is one probate avoidance tool. There are others. The most common will be listed and explained below. The other principal benefit of a living trust package is to avoid conservatorship. Again, you will recall that conservatorship is a court proceeding in which the court decides who will have control over the decisions regarding the assets and the body of a person who is incompetent and unable to decide or act for himself or herself. In order to accomplish both objectives, the most potent prescription is to have a living trust package that includes a living trust, a pour-over will, appropriate and needed transfer documents, a durable general power of attorney, and depending upon the state of residence, either a health care directive, health care power, or living will, which today must comply with the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A. Let's take the time to discuss other will substitutes that can, to a limited extent, help avoid probate without a living trust. These are worth discussing primarily because they are commonly used by people to try to avoid probate without understanding their limited benefits or their unintended consequences. Let's talk about real estate first. When one or more people own real estate together, they have several choices. These are all common ways of taking title. Tenancy in common. Tenants in common own an undivided percentage interest in the property. Each owner has the right to occupy all of the property. That is what is meant when we speak of an undivided interest. When one owner dies, that person's interest will be transferred through a probate proceeding to that owner's heirs, whether by intestacy or designated in a will. Tenancies in common are essentially partnerships. For all intents and purposes, the tenants in common are separate people, may well have separate lives and separate families, and choose to own this way for basically business partnership reasons. Joint tenancy with rights of survivorship. When there is a joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, two or more owners have an undivided interest in the real estate, like a tenancy in common, but with rights of survivorship. When there is a joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, two or more owners have an undivided interest in the real estate, like a tenancy in common, but with rights of survivorship. This means that upon death, those joint tenants remaining alive receive the share of the deceased joint tenant in equal portions. In other words, if A, B, and C are joint tenants, and C dies, now A and B each own one half of the property as joint tenants. If B dies, then A is the sole owner. If C had a last will and testament that left all of his assets to his children would get no part of the property C owned as joint tenants with others. Joint tenancy interests cannot be split and directed elsewhere by a will. The interest of the deceased joint tenant is transferred by operation of law and without probate as to that interest. However, the value of the interest is included in the estate for estate tax purposes. Since no probate is required for the transfer of the deceased person's interest to the joint tenant, and because generally a person's most substantial and valuable asset is his or her home, many people are tempted to deed their property to themselves and their children as joint tenants. You will see that this is a bad idea. Tenancy by the entirety. Tenancy by the entirety is basically joint tenancy between husband and wife. It operates like a joint tenancy, but the entirety refers to the marriage. Community property. In community property jurisdictions, a marriage creates the marital community. This concept originates in civil law jurisprudence as opposed to common law. The earnings through the labor of either spouse during the time of the marriage, in the absence of an agreement to the contrary, belongs to the community. So do separate assets that are commingled. Frequently, husband and wife will take title to real estate as follows, John and Mary Smith, as community property. This has the result of making the property a community asset, even if separate funds were used in the purchase of the property. There is no right of survivorship in this case, and for inheritance purposes, the asset is owned just like a tenancy in common, meaning that the deceased spouse's share of the property will be transferred after death according to that person's will or by intestacy. However, community assets enjoy the benefit after death of what is called a step-up in basis. We will discuss this more shortly. Community property with right of survivorship. Community property with right of survivorship is a way to hold title to real property. It is authorized in certain, but not all, community property states so that the owners of the property can combine the income tax benefits of community property and the probate avoidance benefit of joint tenancy property. Income tax and basis. Basically, these are the ways people hold title to real property. But what is this talk about income tax benefits and stepped-up basis? Basis is, generally speaking, the cost of acquiring a capital asset. It is purchase price plus the cost of any capital improvements to the property. If H and W own real estate simply as tenants in common, and W dies first, the basis of H's half share would be unaffected, and W's share would pass by her will or by intestacy. W's half interest will receive a new basis for tax purposes based upon the value of her interest, one half the value of the property, at the time of her death. The law treats the inheritance as if the recipient of W's share purchased her interest for its market value on the date of her death. So, if H and W acquired the property for $30,000 in 1974, and it was now worth $600,000, their basis for tax purposes would be the $30,000, assuming that they made no capital improvements, as opposed to repairs, to the property. If H and W then sold the property, they would have a capital gain of $570,000. If the property were their primary residence, they would each be entitled to an exemption from tax on the first $250,000 of gain, leaving a net taxable gain of $70,000. That's $570,000 gain less $500,000 combined exemption. If it were a second home or rental property, for instance, the taxable gain would be $570,000 because they would be entitled to no residence exemption. Now, if they owned the property as community property, upon W's death, the community interest would be distributed according to her will or by intestacy. If W left her share of community property by will to her husband, H would now own 100% of the property. But since the federal tax law treats the transfer as one going from the community to the husband's adjusted basis is now $600,000, not $30,000, and not $330,000. So, if H sells the property soon after W's death, there is no taxable gain. If he sells it 5 years later for $660,000, the gain is only $60,000. That is because the gain is always computed by the formula NSP minus AB, where NSP stands for net sales price and AB stands for adjusted basis. The adjusted basis is purchase price plus the value of any capital improvements made to the property. If it is his residence, then that gain is completely sheltered by the residence exemption. If it is income property, the owner depreciates the adjusted basis so that the adjusted basis decreases each year. Once again, if it is income property, the owner depreciates the adjusted basis so that the adjusted basis decreases each year. When the husband receives a stepped-up basis after death, he can begin depreciating all over again. As you can see, a stepped-up basis is an important tax benefit that should always be sought and maximized. If the same property was held by H and W as joint tenants or as tenants by the entirety, The tax treatment regards stepped-up basis as the same for tenants in common. If you don't understand this, don't worry. It is really not that important if you establish a living trust. If you are married and live in a community property jurisdiction, you will want to elect to have appreciated assets owned as community property in your trust. This is to assure a stepped-up basis on the entire property at the death of the first spouse. Trap for the unwary. Some people, doing what we call homespun estate planning, will deed real estate to themselves and their children as joint tenants. They do this for the purpose of avoiding probate on that property. But this is a bad idea. Before we go further, let's explain how the capital gains picture differs based upon whether property passes by a gift made while the donor is alive or whether it passes as a result of the owner's death. The law refers to these respectively as an inter vivo gift and a testamentary gift. When a gift of appreciated property is made during the life of the donor, the recipient takes the property with the same tax basis that the donor had before the gift. If H and W give the property to their children while both H and W are still alive, the children have an adjusted basis of $30,000, just like the parents. If the children later sell the property even after their parents' death, their gain will be computed by subtracting from the net selling price only the $30,000 basis. But if H and W keep title until the death of both and their children receive the same property, then as a testamentary gift, the children will receive a stepped-up basis to the value of the property on the date of death, or $600,000. No taxable gain will be realized except on net sales proceeds in excess of $600,000, saving the children many tens of thousands of dollars of income, capital gain taxes. There will be no gift or estate tax due on that gift in any case because the $1 million exemption applies to gifts, whether lifetime gifts or gifts after death. After the gift, there will still be remaining $400,000 that can be given before there will be any gift or estate tax due. $1 million minus $600,000, the value of the gift. This highlights the first major disadvantage of homespun estate planning, deeding real estate from H and W to H and W and their children as joint tenants. As a result, they will be making an inter vivo gift of a substantial portion of an appreciated asset. The opportunity to save substantial capital gains taxes by making the same gift as a testamentary gift will be lost. Also, if the gift is made during the lifetime of H and W, now the asset is potentially available to the creditors of the children, a major problem if the children get into financial trouble. A catastrophic injury in a car accident with one of their children driving can conceivably practically wipe them out. Also, if H and W want to refinance or borrow on a subordinate mortgage against the real estate, the children will have to agree and sign. So H and W better stay on very good terms with their children or they find their financial freedom severely limited. These are just some of the downside scenarios caused by leaving an interest in your property to your children as joint tenants as a plan to avoid probate. Other probate avoidance methods. Totten Trust. A Totten Trust is a special bank account. The name comes from a case from New York called In re Totten, decided in 1904. That case authorized the bank to offer an account in which one person could deposit funds into an account in trust for another. But in a Totten Trust, unlike a true trust, all of the funds in the Totten Trust account remain, for all purposes, the property of the depositor, and there is no obligation on the depositor to preserve any of the funds for the benefit of the beneficiary. Upon the death of the depositor, though, the funds automatically are now held at the bank for the benefit of the beneficiary who, upon proof of death of the depositor, can withdraw the funds. It is a will substitute, but only for the assets actually in the account at the time of death. Since that case was decided, virtually all states have passed laws allowing such accounts. Joint ownership of certain personal property. Some states allow certain personal property to be owned by two or more persons, allowing the property to automatically pass to the surviving joint owner without probate upon the death of one joint tenant. The problem here is that the funds or assets in the account belong to both account holders and therefore, Just as in the case of real estate, the assets are available to creditors of either party. For this reason, many informed parents do not want to own assets jointly with their children. If their children get into any financial trouble, again, the parents can lose their own assets to creditors of their children. Conservatorship is still a problem. A Totten Trust account will not create a gift to the beneficiary until death and will avoid probate with respect to those funds. Neither will the funds be available to creditors of the beneficiary, at least until the death of the depositor. Joint ownership of personal property will avoid probate, but will make the assets available to the creditors of all joint owners. But if the depositor into a Totten Trust becomes incompetent due to accident or illness, the depositor, who has the power to withdraw funds from the account, can't anymore. If real estate is owned jointly or as tenants in common and one of the owners becomes incompetent due to accident or illness, the incompetent joint owner cannot sign the documents required to sell or refinance. The same is true with any other device to avoid probate. Probate avoidance does not protect the family from the considerable costs and inconvenience of a conservatorship proceeding if someone becomes incompetent by disease or accident.